And I turn around, there's a massive shark's head attached to my leg. This is literally my worst nightmare. And then all of a sudden, my survival instincts kick in and shit. But at that point, I think the shark decided I was edible, and it just starts to thrash me, takes me underwater. That's when the pain kicks in, and it is like something I can't even describe to you.
What up? Fuck. What's going on, you little blueberry muffins? We're back. We're better than ever. Today's episode is an absolute banger. So sit down, get some popcorn, maybe masturbate before this, because it's a bit more of a serious.
Yeah, it's a little more serious because the guy got his arm bit off by a a shark.
The double whammy.
Nuts, yeah, dude.
He lost both of them.
Some people get one. He did both.
Yeah, he was brave enough to just say, fuck it. We're going crazy. His name is Paul DeGelder. Great dude. The story is absolutely fucking nuts. You've probably seen him on Discovery. He does a lot of stuff with Shark Week. He's done stuff with David Dobrik and stuff for Shark Week. And Will Smith. Great dude.
You just did some with David Dobrik, didn't you?
Yeah. I just filmed his Views podcast, which is out yesterday.
Nice.
And I was so red and so nervous.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not,
did he say anything crazy?
Yeah, I said some shit that I probably will get me canceled. Because I said something that I legitimately fully just like stumbled over my words.
Did they try and like prank you or anything on the podcast?
No. They were really sweet. And I think that, they were very, like, everyone was super lovely and very sweet. Like, Jason was really funny. David's really funny. Natalie was super nice.
I met Natalie. She's really nice.
Yeah, she just seems like a very smart, like, businesswoman, like, focused on her shit.
Yeah.
Because, like, I met them all. I've met them a couple times, but at the Hubie event, we did a Hubie event, which is the link that I use for my bio.
Mm.
Also, great people. We met them at that event because I had it at David's house, but I was, like, really, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not drinking, so it's a little bit, I get a little bit nervous when I go talk to people and stuff. So I met Todd for the first time. But the episode was nuts, so hopefully I don't get in trouble from it. I told my team after, I was like, it was crazy. Like I showed David a video of me like having sex with this mind you, the girl knows the videos exist. She's a porn star, she enjoys it.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
Oh yeah. That girl.
Yeah. I told them that story.
I might have seen her naked too.
Ah, when she told us to FaceTime you.
I was chilling on my couch just watching TV, and I'm like, oh, it's midnight and Harry's FaceTiming me. I'm like, what's Harry doing FaceTiming me? I open it up and there's just a porn star spreading her pussy open on FaceTime. Yeah. I'm like, hell yeah, Harry.
No, that was it. Dude, that was an interesting evening. We were just like sitting there. She's like, you should start FaceTiming your friends. Wouldn't this be a cool prank call?
That was honestly the funniest call because it was like her spread open and then Zach's head popping in the corner, Zach's bald head just peeking in. I'm like, this is like.
I still have the screenshot. Where is it? Yeah, because it was legitimately her idea. She's like, I want you to call your friends. Look at how happy you are.
Oh my god,
so aggressive.
That was crazy.
But I told them that story, so that was just probably one of the craziest moments of my entire life.
That was wild.
Where like we're at Boa, which is a very high-end restaurant, and she's like trying to get naked and shit, and she's like, I would just rather be naked. And I was like, you're gonna get me deported if you just keep taking your clothes off and acting in this way. Even the manager come over, and I'm good friends with him. She's like started getting her titties out for him, and I was like, just imagine someone on a date and just looks over and
she's
trying to jerk me off under the table with like one titty out. Like it was chaos. And Zach was there. Everyone was confused. Like I've never been so nervous in my life.
Wow.
like legitimately, I was fully taken back.
Like you gotta be a freak for Harry Jowsey to be like, oh, I don't know, can we like tone it down a little bit?
Literally, she literally said, she's like, I thought you would have gonna be more crazier than this and more like wild. And I'm like, bro, like I don't think I can match this energy. Like I don't have the craziness in me to be able to keep up with this. Like I was just so nervous. I was like, wow, like is this me maturing? Is this me growing up in the world?
Maybe.
Probably not.
Nah, probably not.
But a good thing to use in the bedroom is Lilo. Lilo have sent us a bunch of toys. If you haven't used a cock ring before or you're in a relationship, you should give it a go. Number one, it makes your dick look a little bit bigger because it's full of blood. Vibrates. Feels good for the girl. Feels good for the guy. Just all around great time. But if you want to check out Lilo and all their amazing products, link is in the show notes and use code Harry. Is it 20% off?
25% off.
25% off. So go crazy. Go get horny and FaceTime your friends after you have sex. Because it's always a great flex. But speaking of that, I think my cock's grown.
Yeah, you were saying that. I don't know if that's true or not.
Do you want to see? No. I'll get my cock out right now.
I measure it every day.
No. So there's this girl that I... So I had sex with someone recently that I haven't slept with in a long time, like 6 months or so.
Yeah.
And she made a comment. She's like, hey, I think your dick's grown. And which was like really surprising because I'm like... How could it get any much bigger? Because it's already like 12 inches.
I think it keeps growing until you're like 25, I think, right?
Well, I'm turning 25 this year.
Yeah, there you go.
So maybe it's on its like last hurrah to try and get extra inches in. But I text her and I was just like, well, I started taking new supplements, like new vitamins. So because I saw on TikTok there was this trend where this guy's like, hey, if you want to increase your libido and your dick size, you should take this shit. And I was like, whatever. But I've been taking it for about a month or so. So I asked her again. I was like, hey, like, were you being legit about saying my dick grew? Like, I was like, length, girth, like, what is it? I'm doing a science experiment for my friends. She goes, length. You penetrated me so much deeper.
Nice.
Which is crazy. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I will tell you exactly the four supplements that I've been taking, or four vitamins I've been taking.
We should create a tap-in stack and then sell it on the podcast.
We should. the cock stack.
Yeah.
But I don't... Look, again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I don't know if this stuff is actually... Yeah, also consult with your doctor before you take any of this stuff. Obviously, we're not medical professionals. But I don't know if this shit actually is going to help. I don't know if it's maybe the fact that I'm still a grown boy, but I would rather tell you guys. So maybe your boyfriend... your brother, your sister, your mother, I don't know.
She's got a big old hammer too.
maybe she needs to go. We never know. But the first thing I've been taking is called ashwagandha.
I take that.
You do take that?
Yeah.
Your cock's growing?
No, it's shrinking.
you have to put it up your ass.
Oh, okay.
You're taking it wrong.
Nice. So I take that every day. It's really good for you. It helps your body deal with stress, too.
Yeah, it says reduces stress, anxiety, improves concentration, fatigue, and sleep, protects against oxidative stress, which I don't know what the fuck that means.
Yeah, some fucking nerd shit. Oxidative stress is, I probably don't know when you're stressed. Stress kills muscle.
There you go. So it was going to make you bigger.
Yeah.
Maybe. Again.
A lot of bodybuilders take it.
This shit, I don't know if it's one of these things that is helping with the cock growth, but I'm taking four of these
ashwagandha,
things.
Ashwagandha. What's the other one?
Ashwagandha. This one called maca.
Yeah. That's testosterone booster. I take that.
Maca root. Yeah. Four benefits of it. So it just, again, improves aspect of fertility in males.
Yeah, Huberman Lab talks about this.
He does?
Yeah. You get like a 200, you can get like a, there's one called Long Jacks, which is like called Tunga Ali. Is that another one that's listed there?
No, what is that?
If you take that with maca, you can have like your natural testosterone, your free floating testosterone can go up like 200 to 400 points.
Really?
Yeah, which is like a lot.
Which is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I might look into that as well.
Yeah.
So the maca one improves mood and energy as well. For this one, for ladies, may help relieve symptoms of menopause. And the other one, okay, the third one that I've been taking is sea moss. Do you take that as well?
Sea moss? No, I've heard of that though. I'm down to take it.
Yeah, it helps with...
Like seaweed, like in sushi?
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Sick. Yeah, sea moss, because that's like thyroid shit.
I think so.
It
helps with fertility, same shit. So I'm going to be so fertile. No one come near me, you'll get pregnant. Dude. I'm so fertile. I don't know if that helps.
And what's the fourth one?
Okay, the fourth one is specifically designed for your cock.
Horny goat weed.
Oh, that was a big thing. What happened to that? Did you ever take that?
No. I take... I take I'd eat shark fin soup because I'm trying to fucking get one back for our boy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just fucking kidding. I'm vegetarian. I don't eat meat.
Yeah, don't eat shark fin soup, please. This other one's called Lock and Load. It's by this company called Gorilla Mind. Because I was reading a bunch of reviews on it. Essentially, it's meant to make your load bigger and like your erections better. So I was
nice,
like,
dude.
I'm gonna fuck it. Like, let's give it a go.
But is that like a blend of stuff, though?
I think it's a bit. I'm probably overdosing on a bunch of shit. That's probably why my cock's like mutating.
Also, don't take medical advice from this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Consult your doctor before you take anything this podcast recommends.
I'm just trying to help our boys get past the boyfriend dick onto the husband dick.
Yeah.
It supports an increase in semen volume, fertility, erection quality, blood flow, and more pleasure in the bedroom. I don't need more pleasure because I'm already coming quick enough, but there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, if you want to give it a go, look that stuff up. Make sure it's good for you.
Yeah, and talk to your doctor first.
100% talk to your doctor first. But it's just in case, like, if you want to give it a go, if maybe, I don't know, lads, I wish someone told me this shit sooner.
I actually started taking this shit called, I don't know, it was like some blend of just all the herbs and spice, like some testosterone boost, some shit from like Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, the effect of it. I take it every day and you get a real boost.
Yeah, you're chopped
Tongali and all this shit.
And you're just horny all the time?
Yeah, yesterday I texted a shirtless photo to all my friends.
Yeah, I received it. Your traps look nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, and then you're like, oh no, it's the lighting. I was like, bro, you look good.
It's the... I'll show you the workout to make your traps fucking go nuts. You with a barbell and you lift it like this.
Shrugs?
Not upright shrugs. Rows? Maybe it's called upright row. I don't know. No one taught me how to work. I just show up and I just fucking lift shit. I walk into the gym, dude, speedo on, and I just fucking glare at people. That's how you get ripped. I walk into the gym with a speedo and all my chains on, and I just fucking stare at my enemies and just do fucking the same workout every day. Now I'm getting fucking ripped, dude. 75 hard.
Fuck. Just hard for 75 days straight.
Yeah.
It's fucking nuts. I just got a Bentley, which is crazy.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's what I saw in the parking lot. That's fucking baller, dude.
Yeah. So if you know, I ordered a Lamborghini truck a while ago. Mm-hmm. And I ordered it in September, but because...
Did it just not show up?
Well, it takes so long to build it, and apparently there's just such a backup at the factory, and they build it by hand, fucking idiots, just build it normally like the rest of us.
Yeah, fucking 3D print it.
Yeah. Make it out of cheese. Fuck it. There's so much cheese.
Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, why not? Fuck.
I've been watching these YouTube videos of these like kids in India making like Bugattis and shit out of like clay and sticks and shit.
Yeah, what is... Bro, these kids can do... The fuck is Lamborghini doing?
Crazy.
So I was like, I'm sick of driving in my car. Like, you got a new car. Mm-hmm. I was like, we should just keep leveling up.
Hell yeah.
So it's time.
I had to buy a car because I was tired of being 30 years old and then just like driving around all these fucking TikTokers and Lambos with my fucking 01 Honda Civic. I'm just like, these kids are half my age with fucking Lambos. It's pissing me off.
Yeah, but like, it's sick, but a good way... half the reason why I was able to get it is because I've been using this app called Versus Game.
Yeah.
If you don't know what Versus Game is, I'm actually an investor in it. Same with David Dobrik, Noel Beck, a whole bunch of other big people are on it. It's you can make like 50-50 bets and win legitimate money on this app. It's on the App Store. It's all legit. It's 100% safe.
Oh, dude, we should do like a question that they can answer.
Yeah, well, because I did David Dobrik's podcast, because it's 50-50.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe I'll do a question on there this week and be like, will David Dobrik follow me by Friday or by...
Or when the podcast comes out?
No, because this would come out the day after.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
I was like, will David Dobrik follow me back on Instagram by, let's say, Thursday?
Okay.
LA time, we'll finish at like 1 p.m. So if you go on there, if you vote on it 50-50, if you get it right, you win money. I'm pretty sure you double your money.
Sick.
Don't quote me on that, but
I'll put a link so people can download it in the show notes.
Yeah, download it. Abby's won, what, $70 on
that? Yeah, I won like $70. That's pretty sweet. There's some easy bets in there too. I was like, oh, I'll take your money, dude.
Yeah, I post the dumbest questions and It's easy money.
Bro, you posted the dumbest question one time. You know, you posted something about Tether going to $1.20. It's like, it's always $1. It doesn't change price.
I don't know.
It fluctuates by no more than a penny.
I don't know. But
I was like, free
everyone
money,
made money on that one. Everyone made money on that. Well, check out Versus Game. I hope you enjoyed our quick intro, quick live cap. Anything else?
I don't know, dude. I'm stoked on this interview.
Yeah, this...
I'd love to hear people's opinions on if we're too offensive with some of our jokes.
Yeah. Nah, fuck, don't give us opinions if you're upset because Paul laughed.
Yeah, shut up, fucking fannies. Losers. Fuck.
All right, well, thank you so much for hanging out through the intro. If you want us to do more of these, please drop a comment. Let us know. We do try our best to reply to all comments.
Hell yeah.
But anyway, today's episode is going to be great. So... get stuck in.
Yeah, be safe out there.
Yeah, be safe out there and don't put your feet in sharks' mouths.
Yeah, and don't eat shark fin soup.
Yeah, don't do that. All right, what's up? Welcome back to the podcast. I hope you have an amazing day. Quick reminder, if you're new here, please make sure you subscribe, like, and comment. We have another Australian. I think this is our third Australian on the podcast.
Yeah, three too many.
Three too many on the podcast. Paul DiGelder,
third Australian in the past 2 weeks, actually.
Yeah.
Who else did you have?
Two of my friends from Australia flew over, and I was like, fuck, just come on.
Oh, awesome.
Fourth Australian, Jason Ellis.
Oh, I know Jason.
Okay,
I've been
nice.
On his podcast a couple of times.
Oh, hell yeah.
Jason was on as well. Yeah.
He's a wild boy.
Yeah, he's
nuts.
He
is fucking nuts. Yeah. So Paul has a very interesting story. He's missing an arm and a leg. Me and Abby did not take it. We did not take
technically
it.
Technically a hand.
A hand, right, yeah. Hand. We didn't take it. He arrived missing it. Where's it gone?
It's inside a shark.
So he lost it. It's inside. It was a 10-foot bull shark.
Yeah, it's probably shark poop by now.
Wow, dude, how did that happen?
I was working as a Navy clearance diver, which is. I don't know how to explain it. They don't really have like a similar thing out here.
Yeah.
It's like a Navy diver out here that works in the hard hats and does underwater welding, but we also do like tactical stuff, diving on pure oxygen rebreathers, doing reconnaissance, bombing raids. We do bomb disposal underwater and
fuck.
Then we do it on land as well.
That's stressful.
Yeah, it's a cool job.
What
like,
the
it's,
fuck?
Like, you know what Australia's like? We don't have as many people as America.
Yeah.
So... we have a very small military. Yeah. So, you know, I went down to Camp Pendleton a few times to work and train and stuff. They have more people on that base than we have in our whole military. So we've got like 40,000 people. And so we don't have like the amount of people to do everything specialized. So they got Navy divers, they got SEALs, they got this, they got that. So we as clearance divers have to do all of it.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's super interesting. You never know
you're
what
like
you're doing.
Like a Swiss Army.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like swimming in Sydney Harbour that day. We were doing a counter-terrorism exercise, testing out this new equipment to see if it could detect attack swimmers and attack divers.
Did it detect attack sharks?
Yeah, it did not, apparently.
Fuck.
Yeah, right? That's what I was upset about. And I wasn't even supposed to be there that day. My chief bribed me into being there. So,
really?
Yeah, we got called into the office one day and we're getting this brief about this exercise that we're being asked to be a part of to test unmanned video and sonar.
Fuck.
And we had to sign a waiver and we're like, the fuck?
Yeah, what is
we do
on
dangerous
here?
Shit all the time. Why are we signing waivers all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And so most of us are just like, nope. Not signing it, not doing it. The new guy did, because he's like, you know, he's the new guy. He's
got of course.
To do what they say. Whereas we're like a couple of years deep. We're like,
no way.
No fucking way of doing that. My chief turns around and he's like, because I was supposed to go on an exchange to the UK and work with the British Navy divers. He turns around to me and he goes, oh, DG, which was my nickname, he goes, you've got a exchange proposal in the pipes. If you want to go overseas, you'll do this job. And I'm like, you motherfucker.
Wow.
Like, so I had to sign on.
I bet he's regretting saying that.
Dude, he came into the hospital, kissed me on the head. And I was like, just don't, what? Chief,
get away from me.
Don't kiss me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a heart attack like 6 months later.
So he's gone?
He's fine now. Good. He survived, but the stress got to him.
Yeah, bro.
So I was swimming on the surface in Sydney Harbour, right along alongside the Navy base. You might know the area. It's called Woolloomooloo. It's got that finger wharf there. Yeah. And the big Navy base where all
can't
the ships
have
are.
Slam in there?
Yeah, we work there all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whenever we're doing training, we're, you know, practicing searching the hulls of ships for bombs and stuff like that. We'll dive there. We take all of our students there to teach them. So this is not like a weird thing. And so I've got that new guy in the water first, and he's just up and back on the surface, swimming from point A to point B. Yeah. And they're trying to detect him with this special equipment. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning. It's February 2009, overcast, you know, summer, obviously, but it's kind of chill because it's overcast. Water's murky. And I pull him out of the water to give him a break, and I jump in. And I got a pair of black fins on and a black wetsuit. And I'm on the surface on my back, just kicking my legs, just going from point A to point B.
Yep.
And I turn to look over my left shoulder to make sure that I'm still headed towards the bow of the warship that I'm supposed to be hitting. And all of a sudden, I just get this huge in my leg and kind of shocked me. Didn't hurt. I'm just like, what the fuck was that? Like, did the guys in the boat get too close? I didn't hear them because my ears are full of water. And I turn around, there's a massive shark's head attached to my leg. And I've never seen a big dangerous shark before. This is literally my worst nightmare. I was like, the guys on my team used to put pictures of great whites on my locker and go, yeah, we saw that in the harbor the other day, just to fuck with me. And so literally my worst nightmare. But I didn't, what do you do? My brain's trying to process this thing that I've never seen before, like here. And so like it's like a second, and I think I'm trying to work out what to do. I think the shark's trying to work out if I'm food. And then all of a sudden my survival instincts kick in, and you know, I'm thinking, I've seen Shark Week. I've seen the Crocodile Hunter. Jab it in the eyeball. But I can't because it's actually got my hand and my leg in its mouth. So
it's a big shark.
Yeah, 10-foot bull shark. So I'm trying to pull my hand out of its mouth. I can see the teeth embedded into my wrist, and the flesh is tearing as I pull it.
What fuck?
What was the pain like? Did your brain even comprehend?
I only felt the pain as I'm trying to pull my hand out at that point, because sharks' teeth are so sharp. They're like ultimate cutting tools.
Yeah.
So I couldn't feel the teeth in my leg. I could just feel the pressure of the clamp on it. And I could see the teeth like half embedded into my leg through the wetsuit.
Oh my God.
So I can't use my left hand. I think, all right, I got a right hand. And I'm reaching over and I'm trying to get my finger in the eyeball, but I can't reach it. I'm like just an inch away from the eye. So I grab it by the nose and I tried to lever it off of me, but that just pushed the teeth of the bottom jaw deeper into my leg. So I felt that. And then I thought, okay, what's the last thing that you think of to do when
kiss it.
Kiss it, yeah.
That would be the last thing I'd ever think.
Punch it, right?
Yeah. You
punch it in the nose. So I cock back to punch it. But at that point, I think the shark decided I was edible, and it just starts to thrash me, takes me underwater. And this is all on YouTube. You can actually watch the attack because it's been on TV a few times.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So it starts thrashing me, takes me underwater. That's when the pain kicks in, and it is like something I can't even describe to you, like immeasurable agony. So all of the fight goes out of me. I'm just a rag doll underwater, drowning because the water's flowing into my lungs now, just thinking I'm dead. I'm going to die right now. I'm not going home.
Fuck.
Yeah, shit day at work.
Oh, so
it's possibly the worst day.
So how'd you get out?
It's literally just tearing me to pieces underwater.
Yeah.
And eventually its teeth meet in the middle. It's torn through my whole hamstring and ripped off my hand, and it removes my hamstring and my hand. So because I'm not attached to it anymore, like my wetsuit makes me buoyant. I pop to the surface. The shark's tail thrashes like it's like, I've got food in my mouth. I'm getting out of here. You can't see through the water, so we don't know what it did, but it just sort of thrashed and I didn't see it anymore.
And then you're just fucking screaming pain.
I'm like, okay, I don't know what's wrong with my leg. No idea, because it's underwater. Yeah. But I'd go to swim back to my safety boat to get out of there thinking, okay, there's blood in the water for sure. We all have that, you know, the thought in our head, sharks can smell a drop of blood in, you know, 10,000 leagues of ocean. So I'm like, I got to get out of here before another shark smells this and comes in. So I start to swim. I take a stroke and my hand's gone. Like, my arm ends at the end of my wetsuit.
What the fuck?
And so my training tells me I've got to keep that wound above my heart to try and slow the bleeding. And so I've got that out of the water. I'm swimming with one hand and one leg back to the safety boat. Not knowing, my teammates told me later that I was actually swimming through a massive pool of my own blood. And so they're coming in the safety boat, little black inflatable.
Yeah.
And I'm just not thinking I'm going to make it.
Your adrenaline is just fucking going
through the roof.
So it's probably a little bit hard to remember.
Dude, I've spoken about it so much because I do a lot of public speaking and I've done a lot of shows for Discovery Channel. So the more I spoke about it, the more I remembered. And then I talked to my teammates and sort of filled in the gaps. Mm. And I was awake through the whole thing, basically.
Yeah.
And so eventually they get to me, they pull me out of the water, lay me flat in the bottom of the boat. They didn't know what, like, they saw me, they, like, his leg was floating at a weird angle. We actually thought he'd almost been bitten in half. And so they lay me flat, and just out of total relief of not being eaten anymore, I relax and I pass out. My buddy thinks I'm going into cardiac arrest. So Tomo straddles me, starts pummeling me in the chest to stimulate my heart. And he wakes me back up, and I wake up and I look over and my hand's gone, ripped off by a shark, and I look up and Tomo's beating the shit out of me. And I just think, today sucks.
Yeah. Tomo's, why did Tomo need to punch you? Just relax, Tomo.
Yeah.
I've already struggled.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
I just got eaten. My buddies beat me up.
Yeah, yeah. Why did he start punch me the fucking chest?
He must have owed him money or something.
Yeah. So after that, I'm just thinking, if I close my eyes, I'm dead. So I have to, my only goal is to stay awake, to keep my eyes open, look at Tomo. I'm like, I can feel the levity in the boat. So I've got Darty driving the boat.
Yeah.
I've got Lockie trying to put a tourniquet around my leg with a strap from a life jacket. I've got Tomo over the top of me, and I can just feel the stress. And so I look at Tomo and the boys. I'm like, hey, can you make sure someone looks after my motorbike? And I think I'm riding home to Bondi today. And they're just like, looking at me like, what the?
Hey, what is wrong with this? Why is he trying to make a joke?
Shut the fuck up, Paul. You're dying.
Wow.
So I'm just like trying. I'm listening to Tomo. I'm looking at his face. That's all I got to do. Breathe.
Is Tomo a good looking guy?
He's a great looking.
Thank God. Because if he was ugly, that would have made it worse.
Handsome Papua New Guinean guy.
Shout out Tomo.
3 months later, he's in Afghanistan with my chief that was there that day and my baby sister. So she's the medic in Afghanistan on patrol.
Thank God there's no sharks.
Him and my chief are the bomb disposal guys. Yeah, exactly. Big dogs. She said she had to get her boyfriend to come out of the hut at night to throw rocks at the dogs to keep them away from her when she's pissing.
What the fuck?
So it was crazy. Like, my two guys that saved my life were in Afghanistan 3 months later with my baby sister.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
So how did they, like, essentially, I'm thinking you're probably losing so much fucking blood. How did they stop? Because I guess that'd be the biggest thing you'd be worried about. You want to die from blood loss.
By the time the boat got to the wharf, they said that the boat was an inch deep in my blood. They got me onto the wharf.
Man.
The paramedics were on the way. But my chief realized that they couldn't stop the bleeding. That little strap, the tourniquet that they'd made, wasn't stopping the bleeding from my leg. So once again, Lockie got called in. And my chief said, you've got to stop that blood. So he had to put his hand inside my leg in the wound and grab an artery and pinch it closed with his fingers until the paramedics arrived.
Shout out to Lockie.
Yeah, said something he never, ever wants to do again.
Yeah.
But yeah, at that point, the pain's kicking in, the adrenaline's wearing off. I'm screaming. I'm in agony.
Dude.
Paramedics turn up, pump me full of morphine, still in agony. Like, the pain's not going in. I'm like, give me more fucking drugs. Like, we can't give you any more. Like, you've lost so much blood.
Dude.
We give you any more painkillers, you're going to die. I nearly died in the ambulance from, I just didn't have the energy to breathe. Like, I couldn't make my chest go up and down. So I'm like trying to whisper to the paramedic, like, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And he coaches me through it. It sort of turns into a bit of a Lamar's class, like when you're pregnant. He's like, you got to take lots of short, shallow breaths. And when you have enough energy, take one big gust. So I'm like, and that got me through to the hospital, St. Vincent's. So
shout out St. Vincent's.
Yeah, yeah. They had the theater set up, rocked me straight in there into emergency surgery. I went through 300 donations of blood. So shout out to the blood bank and everyone that donates blood.
Everyone go donate blood right now.
Literally saved my life. 300,
wow.
300 different people's blood inside my body.
Oh my God.
I have weird memories that I don't remember.
Actually?
No, I'm joking.
Oh. I was like, what the fuck? What the fuck, dude?
Yeah, so pretty rough day.
Massively. And so after that point, is it my something that I was thinking about on the way here, like, did you have a bit of an identity crisis, like, after, when you're looking at yourself and you're like, fuck, like, what do I do? Like, how do I be me again?
Yeah. My biggest thing was being terrified that I was going to lose my job and my career, because it was really all I had. You know, I didn't have any fallback. Like, I joined the army first, actually, as a paratrooper, because I realized that I just wasn't responsible enough to be in charge of my own life. Like, I tried everything. Like, I moved from Melbourne to Canberra with my family, and I just, you know, I was pretty good till I hit 15, 16. Like, I was a state level swimmer. I was doing okay in school.
Yeah.
And then I discovered girls and smoking and drinking. And I got bullied a lot at school as well. So I kind of rebelled and became the bad boy.
You were the size of a fucking tree.
I was like a chopstick. I was so skinny. And we didn't have a lot of money. There's six people in my family. Dad was a cop. So trying to feed six people on a policeman's wage. Like, we didn't have a lot of food. Everything we, like, all our Christmas presents, birthday presents, everything was secondhand. And our clothes were homemade. All of our school uniforms were secondhand. And so they didn't have enough food to feed what growing kids needed, especially as, like, athletes, as swimmers.
Yeah.
So I was so skinny. Like, I've got a picture of me before I deployed with the army, and I look like a prisoner of war before I even went away.
Really?
Yeah. It's only since I moved out here that, you know, I'm living the good life and I've got heaps of food and I'm going to Gold's Gym every day. I can actually put on weight again.
Damn, bro.
But yeah, so escaped Canberra at 21 after I got jumped by 20 dudes at a party. Just, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I was selling weed. I was doing drugs, working at a club in Manuka.
Why did 20 dudes want to jump you? What's...
It's kind of long. I was at this farewell for a friend of mine who was being deported out of Australia back to Papua New Guinea because of criminal activity. And this young kid, just, you know, little Indian kid, was trying to get me to buy him a beer, and he was hassling me. I'm like, just fuck off. Just leave me alone. Course. He tipped the table and the beer fell over, and I just laughed. And then he picked up a glass and threw it at me. So I'm like, I've been doing kickboxing by this point. I'm like, no. Yeah, so I stand up and I start walking towards him.
Yeah.
And he backs away. Two of his friends pop up. One of them tries to punch me in the face. So the easiest way to stop a punch is you basically reach out and put your hand on their shoulder. They can't get through that. Yeah. So I put my hand on his shoulder, grab him by the shoulder, pull him in and elbow him in the face.
Wow.
He drops. Boop, 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 boop. All of his friends pop up. I knew no one except for the guy that was going away.
Oh, fuck.
And so I back out. We're at the bowling club. Of all things.
It's a good place for a scrap.
The Deacon Bowling Club. Americans don't know what that is. Like, barefoot bowls. Me and my buddy were talking about it the other day. Like, we need to introduce barefoot bowls to America.
Thing, it's everywhere.
It's the best.
It's everywhere.
You go out on the bowling green, you got no shoes on, you're drinking beer, and you play bowls in the sun.
It's a good time.
I know. So I back out onto the veranda, and I get circled by these guys, and I'm trying to, like, I end up on the ground getting kicked the shit out of, and... they call them the uncles, the big Papua New Guinean older dudes. One of them pulls me out of the fray and sits down. And then I'm sitting there, like, you know, nursing my wounds. And the biggest dude from that group came over and he's like, what happened? I'm trying to explain to him. He's like, come outside and tell me. I'm like, I'm not going outside so you and your friends can beat me up again. He's like, oh, no. If anyone's going to beat you up, it'll be me. I'm like, all right. Go outside. I'm trying to explain it to him. Then his friend pops around his shoulder and pops me in the face. And so I'm like, oh, shit. And then another one tries to do it. And I move my head back and he punches his friend in the face. Then his friend starts beating me up. I'm like, Anyway, I get out of there. I go home and I only live down the street. And my roommates from the bar are like, hey, have you noticed anything weird lately? Like, we got these cars driving really slowly past the house full of dudes. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. So I throw everything that I own, which isn't much, into a tiny little car about the size of this table. I had no license, and I just leave. And I drive 12 hours north to Brisbane, start again.
Wow.
I go, my buddy has a job waiting for me up there a bar in a strip club.
The biggest
and
lesson.
I became a rapper.
You became a rapper as well?
Yeah.
What the biggest lesson is that is if anyone asks you to buy them beer, you just do it now?
No.
Nah, fuck that.
Just be a better fighter.
Yeah.
Be prepared. Gun. Why were you a rapper? What is going on?
Dude, I opened for Snoop.
What was your rapper name?
Why does everyone ask this? It's embarrassing.
What is it?
No, I didn't choose it, okay? I was just giving it. It was called Papal.
Papaw?
Papaw. They said it was because Jay-Z used to say paws, and they're like, oh, that sounds like Paul. And so they started calling me Paul.
You became a rapper?
Yeah, so.
I was
living in Brisbane, working behind a bar in a strip club, and I moved in with these two American dudes, one from Pasadena, one from New Jersey. And they had like a hip-hop community radio show. Then they like just threw parties and stuff and made music. And so I sort of fell in with them and started making rap music with them and rapping and doing parties. And then, you know, it got big and we ended up getting the opening concert for Snoop in 1998.
That's dope.
Yeah. So I opened the concert with Snoop.
Man, what a life you've lived.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah. The song's still on Spotify. It's called Smoke and Hydro. I will ask you to remember that this is 1998.
Can we play it for a second?
Yeah, if you want. Smoke and Hydro.
Wow.
Like, it's not... For a white guy from Canberra in 1998, yeah, I think it's okay.
That's a bit of a huff crowd to get out of.
Right. In hydro hydro?
Smoking, so no G.
Oh, smoking
hydro. And it's me, I do the first two verses, and my buddy from the Cook Islands, this islander guy, he does the last verse. I want people to, because he drops the N-bomb in it, and I'm like, I want people to think that that's me.
Yeah.
That's it.
Is this you or is
this? Yeah, that's me.
This is good.
It's not even telling you.
I know, it was a long time ago.
Wow.
It's good.
That's sick.
So we had a good time. But, you know.
Because I was about to say, I was like, I'm pretty sure it sounds like you're lying, but you have all the proof.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. Dude, my life has been an adventure.
What the
it is,
fuck,
it
dude?
Has not been boring. I've done so much stuff. I can't even. Like, it's my birthday today.
Yes.
I'm old.
Like, how old are you?
I turned 45 today.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I don't feel like it.
You don't
it.
Look it.
I'd like, but the stories that I have, like, I must be. I feel like I'm older. But
fuck, man.
It's so good.
So, like, and I know you do a fair bit of stuff with Shark Week, and you did some stuff with Will Smith. What was that like?
Yeah, yeah.
Is he a good dude?
He was really nice. Yeah, he was a good guy. He was a bit freaked out. He brought two friends. He had his buddy from the Caribbean and his personal trainer, who's an Aussie guy from Bronte.
Right.
I've never met anyone that was more afraid after the shark dive than before than this Aussie guy. And I was so disappointed.
Is that afraid?
He was terrified. He got out of the water and he's like, that was not safe. I don't know what you're talking about. Those sharks wanted to eat us. But Will was cool. Will was really good. We had a great chat. Like when I first meet him and we're filming, we're walking down this little pier together chatting and I'm just looking out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, that's fucking Will Smith.
Yeah.
He's like, he's not even on my TV. He's like right there. This is crazy.
Yeah. That must have been a pinch me moment.
Yeah. And so I got to spend a couple of days with him.
Sick.
Taught him how to dive with sharks in the Bahamas. Really good. You know, I work with Mike Tyson. I got to teach Ronda Rousey how to hand feed bull sharks in Fiji.
Okay. But why? So obviously if
how I to had, hand, if I, hand feed, not feed hands.
Yeah, exactly.
To
bull sharks. It's a nice change.
You got the formula changed.
Fortunately, I can do this now.
Did it right.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just take it.
Yeah, please. Yeah, get rid of it. So, okay, so usually if someone gets attacked by a shark, they probably never want to see a shark ever again. But it kind of sounds like you want to see more sharks.
I didn't initially.
Right.
So when I woke up in hospital, I had tubes down my throat so I couldn't talk. So they made up this little board with letters on it and they gave me a pen and I could like tap out the letters to spell the words that I wanted to say to people. And I don't even remember doing this. They told me I tapped out fucking shark and they all wet themselves. I want anything to do with sharks. I just wanted to go back to work. And so the entirety of my existence became focused on recovery so that I could get back to work because, you know, I didn't have anything. I'm not going back to being a rapper. You know, there's not a lot of money in white rappers in Australia at the time.
That is a specific niche. Yeah.
Or working in a bar. You know, I was terrified of turning back into that person that I was before after everything I'd achieved in the military. And so my whole existence became on recovery. Eat as much food as I can, get healthy, get strong, train. And it's not like America in Australia where they have all of these incredible rehab centers for soldiers like Walter Reed and stuff like that. They tried to send me to an old person's rehabilitation hospital like an hour outside of Sydney. I'm like, I'm not going there.
Yeah, fuck like, that.
I'm going back to my apartment in Bondi.
Yeah.
So I spent 9 weeks in hospital. went home. One of my best friends from childhood moved in with me to look after me and do the things I couldn't do.
Wow.
Drove me to the gym every day at the Army base, and I just focused everything on learning how to use my body again and getting strong and fit, and ended up being allowed to go back to work after 6 months as an instructor.
What?
Yeah.
6 months?
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, I needed to go. I wanted to go back early. Like, I
was, you got
to
keep your mind
bored
busy.
As shit.
Yeah, you know? Bro. I couldn't imagine
the,
how
the
much.
The phantom pains keeping me awake at night. Like, I cried myself to sleep more nights than I can even remember. Yeah. Just out of pain, out of frustration, out of fear. I had this huge wooden bowl in the kitchen full of all the drugs that I had to take. Oxy, Endone, Gabapentin, Temazepam, all this shit.
Fuck.
And I lived in a cloud the whole time. Like, yeah. I couldn't focus on what I needed to achieve. And so I ended up getting off the drugs really early before I was even supposed to. But the problem was then, you know, the pain. And so I drug myself to sleep, and then I just get up in the morning and I try and last as long as I physically could all day without taking any drugs. And, you know, over a period of time, I needed it less and less and less. And I learned to deal with the phantom pains and, you know, the fears. And, you know, there's only so much we can control in our life. But if you take charge of the things that you can control, then at least you know in your heart and soul that you're doing the best that you can. And yeah. So I just focused on that. I take it day by day, train harder every day, get fitter, get stronger. And then so I went to the Navy after 6 months and was like, can I go back to work? Yeah. And they said no. Like, you can't go back to the teams because you've got to be deployable for war. And I was like, I understand that. Look, I'm not as fleet on my feet as I once was.
Yeah.
And, you know, my trigger finger doesn't really work that well anymore. And, but what? Why can't I go to the dive school and I can teach the next generation and I can, you know, maybe inspire them? And they made me jump through all these hoops. I had to do all these like courses and tests. Wow. And I passed every single one of them.
Wow.
And they let me go back, and I was teaching after 6 months.
What was your mindset like before the attack and then after it? Because I can imagine you would be pretty, like, you know, happy, like, I'm learning about shit. And it sounds like you found, like, a crazy, instead of letting this, like, accident define you, you let it, like, actually shape where you wanted to go and, like, how you wanted to project forward.
Honestly, I never saw myself as being in the military my whole life.
Right.
I was kind of at that point a few years deep into the Navy, loving what I do.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Incredible job, but I was always looking to the future. What's next?
Yeah.
I always felt like there was something bigger. You know? Like, sometimes you just know when you're not fulfilling your potential.
Yeah.
And you know that this is just a stepping stone onto the next big thing.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to work out in my head, you know, what's the next big thing? I'm like, loving my job, loving what I do, playing with bombs, diving and all this crazy shit. But what's next?
Yep.
And so then the shark came along and gave me no other option. So I was back at the Navy teaching, ended up hating it, like teaching people to do the thing that I love without ever getting to do it myself. It's kind of, it's torture. Like watching people doing the thing you love and just having to stand on the sidelines.
Yeah.
It sucked. I hated it. And so, but I didn't know what else to do. I had literally no other world skills. Like, when I got out of the Navy, I was thinking maybe I'll be a saturation diver, dive on the oil rigs, make heaps of cash, or I'll become a private military contractor and I'll go work in shitholes and make heaps of cash and maybe die. But that were my only options. And so I had a lot of companies asking me to speak because, like, the whole country was watching my recovery because it was on 60 Minutes twice.
Wow.
It was all over the media. And because I recovered so well, everyone wanted me to go and speak to their companies at conferences and things like that. But the only thing that I was more afraid of than sharks was public speaking.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, I literally quit an IT course at TAFE in Canberra because they started making us speak in front of the class.
No way,
I did
bro.
It once, bro. I stood in front of the class. My hands were shaking. My face was red. My eyes started watering. And I quit the next day.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was like, no, don't want to speak. Don't want to speak. Just want to do my job. And then Canteen, the cancer camp for kids, asked me to speak. I was like, God damn.
You can't tell that.
You can't say no to kids with cancer. Yeah. So that, I'm not a monster.
Yeah, imagine you said no, everyone like, this fucking guy.
Right? And so I'm like, I prepared this thing and I walked into the room like shaking, terrified of these 20 children with cancer. And like there was a kid I met there, it was 18 years old. He went to sleep one night. He woke up 3 months later. He had meningococcal. He had no hands and no feet. They had to chop him off to save his life.
What the fuck?
Right? And this guy hasn't even lived. And he's facing the rest of his life with no hands and no feet. And I'm afraid of talking to these children. This is bullshit. I can do better than that.
Wow.
And so I gave a little presentation and I walked out of that room on top of the world. Like, I can't even describe how good I felt. Like, I made them laugh. We had a good time. I made them forget that they were going back to a hospital just for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you can't underestimate the value of like making people laugh and give them, a story outside of what they're going through to take them away from the pain of their life. Like, that's amazing. And I felt so good for doing that. And then my old school in Canberra asked me to talk. So I went from 20 children to 1,200 children.
Oh, fuck.
I walk into I hadn't been back to that school. Like, I hated that school.
Yeah.
It was a Christian Brothers school run by the Christian Brothers. Oh, it was strict, and I hated it.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on stage and my mum asked if she could come. And I was like, all right, fine. But you're going to stay up the back.
Yeah,
I don't see you. She's like, can I bring my friend? I'm like, fine, stay up the back. My best friend, Steve, I grew up with, he's like, can I come? I'm like, you're going to stay up the back with my mum.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on stage, like, shaking. Like, I feel like my spine is rusty. My neck is, like, rusty turning. The principal walks him down the center aisle, sits him in the front row in front of me. I'm like, the kids are all talking. The principal's like talking over them. I'm like, I'm going to have to deal with this noise and these kids. How am I going to do that? Like, it's so 1,200 children moving a foot makes a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And so he introduces me. I get up dead quiet and I start talking and I'm 5 minutes in and I look at my friend Steve and his eyes are like wide. He's like, holy fuck, this is amazing. And like 1,200 kids, their faces all looking at me, their mouths open, like dead silent. And I thought, this is powerful. Now I get to help shape the ideas and mindset that these children have just by the words that I say. This is something that I never had at that school.
Wow.
You know, no, I didn't have anyone to look up to at that point. And so I thought, you know, this is really something I could wield as a tool to help these kids potentially not go down the same route that I went through with crime and drugs and drinking and all that sort of stuff. So I took a lot of responsibility in doing that whenever I talked to children. And it just opened up this whole new world to me. And so now I think I'm the only person that has this record, but I have like 70 people that have passed out during my presentations because I show the surgery photos and the shark attack footage.
Oh yeah, people don't like seeing blood.
So I've had like one job I did for Microsoft, 6 people passed out.
Really? Yeah,
even the AV guy controlling the panel passed out over his control panel. They said it was the best conference they ever had. But the funny thing is, of those 70 people, 67 of them are men.
Wow.
Yeah, only 3 chicks have ever passed out.
Wow, yeah, chicks are tough.
Yeah, they're tough, man.
They're tough, man. So back to the shark, how did you change your mindset? Because I think that, you know, you saw that shark attack recently in Sydney and the you see the body floating and it just puts more like fear. I remember I lived in near Byron Bay and there was a shark and people were filming it freaking out. But I used to scuba dive out there and I'd see sharks and I'm like, they're just so fucking chill.
Mm.
And like the gray nurse sharks around Byron Bay, sick. They look scary, but they're just like, they don't care. They're just fucking around. So how did you change? Because you're doing a lot of like pro shark stuff now, like your team shark, when you should be the person that's fully against sharks. Like you should be like, get these bastards. But how did you go, you know what, I'm going to love instead of hate?
I think that's probably the power behind it. The fact that I should, if anyone has a reason to hate sharks, shouldn't it be me?
Yeah.
But if I can realize that they need to be protected, then surely anyone else can. And I think one of the worst things you could do is have a voice and have a platform and not utilize that for goodness.
Yeah.
Good for the good.
Well, I just post thirst traps, so I am useless.
it was literally through necessity. I didn't want anything to do with sharks, but every time there was a shark interaction or a death or something like that, the media would come to me for some reason. And so I didn't want to look like a dumbass on television going, oh, sharks, they have fins. And so I had to learn about sharks. And so I started studying, learning about them. And then I was learning about how many sharks we kill and how many sharks kill us.
Yeah.
So there's like, we kill over 100 million sharks a year and sharks kill on average about 10 people in the whole world.
I think you have more chance of getting killed by a cow or a coconut.
Yeah, a vending machine.
It's insane.
Yeah, you got more chance of dying on the way to the beach or drowning at the beach than you do a shark attacking. Yeah, everyone's terrified of sharks. And so I had to try and give the public some perspective on how important, because I didn't, before I got attacked, I didn't know anything about sharks.
Yeah.
I was of the mindset that if we kill them all, then we don't have to worry about them.
Yeah.
We just wipe them out and then we can swim around wherever we want.
We're good to go.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
But they have such an important role in the ecosystem. You know, there's this like house of cards or Jenga, you know, that exists in nature. And if you start pulling out what's called keystone species or apex predators, you're basically removing the Jenga blocks from the bottom. And then if you remove too many, that whole thing collapses.
Yeah.
So if you remove sharks from the ecosystem, then say the fish that they eat, which might be predatory fish that eat the smaller fish, they thrive. So there's no sharks to eat the big carnivorous fish. So the carnivorous fish don't have any predators. So they can breed unabated. Their population explodes. They start eating all the smaller fish, and those smaller fish eat like algae off the reefs, and algae will suffocate a reef if it's not kept in check. So if there's none of those fish to eat the algae, then the coral reefs die.
Yeah.
If the coral reefs die, that's the home. That's the whole existence for life in our oceans.
Yeah.
So then everything tumbles down. Fuck. And then it tumbles down onto us. Yeah. So we're not just protecting sharks. We're literally protecting ourselves from becoming extinct because the ocean will turn into a swamp.
Yeah, and sharks have terrible branding. It's a balanced system that's developed over millions and millions of years that if you remove a piece, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. Sharks have literally been around longer than trees. 450 million years.
Wow.
Yeah. They're perfectly formed. They're there for a specific reason.
Yeah.
If we take them out, then you know that fucking domino effect falls down onto us.
What was the when you first saw a shark again? What was that feeling like? Was it weird?
Yeah. Yeah, it was in Manly Aquarium in Sydney for 60 minutes.
Oh,
it was with a grey nurse shark.
Oh, no way. Yeah. They had the cameras while you were swimming.
Oh, yeah. I got one leg on. I didn't have a waterproof leg at that point, so I'm like bouncing through the aquarium on one leg.
Oh, they put you in the water?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I would have shit myself.
Yeah. Look, I knew grey nurse sharks were harmless. Yeah, they're like puppy dogs, but they have all the teeth hanging outside their face. And like they're swimming directly past my face. And so even though I knew it wasn't going to hurt me, I had these visions in my head of it turning around, ripping my face off. So I looked at the tail. I just looked at the tail. And then it was kind of incremental from there. I did that a couple of times for charities. Then 60 Minutes the following year wanted to reintroduce me to the species that nearly killed me. So they took me out to Fiji.
I hope they were paying you for this.
No. Oh. I'm like, I got a free trip to Fiji.
I'm like, they're putting your biggest fear, like something that nearly killed you in front of you. Like, this would be a great show.
But I'm not the sort of person to shy away from that sort of thing.
Course.
Like the military taught me a lot of stuff about myself.
Yeah.
Like the army taught me how to push past my barriers. The Navy kind of taught me that you are far more powerful and you have so much more in your heart and your soul than you even believe. Mm. You just have to keep pushing harder and harder. And then after the shark attack, I'm like, there are no limits. Like I have nothing.
Anything.
Like if I can survive that, most people's worst nightmare and my worst nightmare, then there's nothing left to be afraid of.
Wow.
And so now I get to live free of fear of anything. I get to do whatever I want. And I get to live like fear free. So my life has just got incredible. Like I swear to God, Discovery Channel is trying to kill me every year. The shit they get me doing, like parachuting directly into the Pacific Ocean for 2 days, 2 nights, no food, no water, surrounded by sharks, surrounded by storms, going from 3 miles away from the coast, swept out to sea, 16 miles out to sea. Yeah, it's crazy. Like diving at 110 feet with great whites, surrounded by great whites, no cage, nothing like that. Hand feeding bull sharks, like crazy, popping bags of my own blood surrounded by tiger sharks.
Like, they're making you do this?
They don't make me do it. They suggest it, and I'm like, sounds cool.
At any point in that, are you scared? Are you just like, maybe this is
I've learned I've learned to turn fear and nervousness into an excitement. Like I don't really feel fear because I have to trust myself intrinsically in my skills that I know what I'm doing. And I now know how to work as a predator in the ocean with the sharks to show them that I'm bigger and badder than they are without hurting them and making them aggressive. So I know how to put my hands on them. I know where to touch them. I know how to fend myself from them. So I just sort of trust in that skill like I did in the military. Like most people, when you're falling out of a plane or you're fast roping out of a helicopter, you know, you've got a helmet and a pair of gloves and that's it. And there's a rope 110 feet to the ground. And there's no safety. You just have to trust in your training. You grab onto the rope with your gloves, you swing out on it, and you just fall down that rope and do it as best you can. So I just basically do the same thing and trust that everything's going
to
be all right.
Was it hard to learn to swim again?
Yeah. I remember the first day I went down to Bondi Beach with two of my friends, and I had a big surfboard with me, and I'm hopping down through the sand, and everyone's looking at me. The media were there taking photos, and I got down to like waist deep water, and I put my board down, and I whispered to myself, "Please don't swim around in a circle," because I thought I'm missing one paddle. I'm just gonna go. Wow. I don't want to be embarrassed. But I didn't really like. You learn to compensate with what you've got. It's amazing what you can do when you don't have a choice. Like, you just work it out.
Yeah, that's a good line. That's a fucking bar right there. Yeah.
We truly are more powerful than we give ourselves credit for.
Yeah.
But most people never understand that because they're never put into the situation where there is no other option but to survive.
Yeah.
And when you are put into that situation, you really turn into yourself. Like, some people will crumble. Some people will turn into the person that they can always be. And you can call on that. Wow. Like, you don't have to be, you know, near death or pushed to your brink. Once you know how that feeling works and how your mind and your body work, you can call on that whenever you want. That's the amazing thing about our psyche, about the internal dialogue that we have. Like, most people go on to automatic pilot and their mind tells them they're shit or you can't do this or be afraid. But you can switch that back on the other way and say, I am fucking powerful. I can do this. Like, everything is a choice. This is truly the only power we have, our power of choice.
Mm.
How do you want to live? Like, this is your power, your choice. Do you want to live a life where you're happy and you're fulfilled and you're embracing challenges, or do you want to be afraid and just have a shit life?
Yeah.
Like, pick one. I'm not a complicated person. I'm not a smart person. Like, but I know how my mind works. If we get to choose, then I'm going to choose living the best life every time, and I'm sure everyone else will as well. Keep it simple. Like, life is complicated enough without us making it more complicated. So keep it simple. What do you want? Do you want a good life? Do you want a shit life?
Yeah.
Want a good life, right?
Yeah.
All right. How are you going to live a good life? Make a choice. Well, I'm going to do all the things that I always dreamed of.
Yeah.
You know, that's that simple. Exactly. I don't know how I'm going to do it right yet, but I'm going to work it out.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah, because this is my life. I only get one.
I think the worst thing that people can do is put stop signs up that don't exist. Like, oh, I can't do this because maybe tomorrow I have to do it. It's like, shut up. Just fucking go.
Yeah.
Just get shit done.
It's not a stop sign. It's just a speed bump.
Yeah.
Like, treat it like that. Slow down. Work out your next move.
Yeah.
Find out what it is. I think the hardest thing for most people is finding out exactly what it is that they want to do and who they want to be. Once you work that out, then, you know, we live in an incredible age of technology where you've got the wealth of the world's knowledge in a few keystrokes.
Yeah.
Like, we got Google, bro.
Everything.
We didn't have Google when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Now you can just literally go on, how do I become an astronaut? Boom. Done. It's right there. You've got literal astronauts that will show you a video of how they did what they did.
Yeah.
There's your path. Just follow the path. It's not as hard as it used to be.
Yeah.
So, like, utilize the tools that we have.
Do you think that going through this stuff, it made you more, like, spiritual? Because you said you're doing sound baths and stuff like that. Is that an LA thing now? Is that just you just tapping into a different mindset or a different frame? Because, like, I went and had a very spiritual awakening and recently, and all my friends like, oh, maybe it's LA rubbing off on you. I was like, I just think when you're here, or like when you start thinking about yourself more, you realize that there's a lot more to you than you originally think, you know?
Yeah, I think you and I are probably of the same mindset. Also, there's just better access to things like that here. Like, I've never been to a sound bath before, or a group meditation or breath work or anything like that. Last night was the first time, but it was free. It was at my chiropractor's office at Kenji, the good chiropractor in Santa Monica, incredible dude. So I went along, tried it out with my girlfriend, and it was cool. Like, it wasn't like, I wouldn't say I'm more spiritual, but I'm just not afraid of looking at the options. Like, I'm smart enough to know that I don't know everything, you know? And so why would we turn our back on something that potentially could be amazing? Like, even if it sounds stupid, even if it sounds hippy dippy, like you don't, it's just because you don't understand it.
Exactly.
And so go and try things out. Like, I did hot yoga the other day. Probably not going to go back.
Oh, it's tough, huh?
Dude, it was like 120 in there. Like, my limbs were falling off because I was sweating so much. And I didn't come out of there, like, because I'm going snowboarding this weekend for the first time in like 10 years. Wow. And so I'm like, I got to be loose. Like, I lift too many heavy weights. I am like a rusty spring.
Bro, you throw some weights out of the gym.
Yeah, I try. And so I'm like, I can do some hot yoga. I got to get loose and limber. Dude, I didn't come out of there loose. I came out of there exhausted, like just sweaty. And like, I felt good for the rest of the day, but I was like, I didn't enjoy that at all, but I'll give it a go.
You have to.
I'm probably just going to sweat at home and stretch now and try and get limber.
Exactly. But, well, I think the worst thing you can do is just not try something new.
Try things, like live life. That's what it's all about. Like,
so we're here.
At the end of your days, what do you want to think about? Like, take it from someone who's nearly died. Okay. Mm. The last thing I was thinking about was my regrets. Do I have any regrets? Have I lived my life in the best way possible? Mm. And at 31, when I was about to die underwater drowning, I remember thinking to myself, are you ready to die? And I looked back on my life from where I started out, you know, all the shit, horrible things that I did as a teenager to everything that I'd accomplished through life and through the military. And I thought, I've lived 10 lives in these 31 years. I've done more than I even feel like I should deserve to have done. If I'm going to die now, I'm ready to go. Wow. And so I literally just let go and waited for death. Wow. And that's when the shark ripped out my hamstring and ripped off my hand, and I popped to the surface and I'm like, shit, I'm not dead.
Wow.
And so now I get to remember that, think about what is it that I want to be thinking about, and how do I want to feel the next time I'm going to die? And I want to feel like that. And everyone should think about that. How do you want to feel? Because the only thing you'll have before you die are your regrets, your missed opportunities. So try and fulfill everything that you want to do. Make up with the people you fought with so that you go to your deathbed with no regrets at all, because that is freedom.
This is solid, bro.
And bro, and it's true. Like, I'm not blowing smoke up anyone's ass. Like, this is literally what happened to me, and now why I get to live this incredible life, getting paid to travel the world, work with celebrities, live in America, do cool shit. Like, it's fucking awesome having that freedom of mindset.
Yeah.
I just want that for everyone.
Are you taking stem cells or anything crazy for your...
No.
No?
No, nothing.
Because I was thinking maybe there's like a lab out there would be like, hey, like, you know...
We'll regrow my limbs like a starfish. Yeah, like a lizard tail or some shit. That would be cool.
All right, Paul, you're a legend. Thank you so much for coming. Where can everyone find you? Are you? What can they buy? Where can they look for you?
Oh, where's the book?
I got it right.
Yeah. So I just relaunched the new book. Sorry, Otis. Uncaged. And Striker Coffee. I got a little.
Oh, I've heard of Striker Coffee. Yeah,
it's a little coffee company we started in Australia. Basically, not to make big bucks or anything. We just wanted to do something that we're passionate about. Being in the military, obviously, some of the creature comforts.
Is it your boys from?
One of the guys is SAS, like our best special forces.
Bro.
We're involved in charities with the military, veterans organizations. Cool. We're not trying to go huge. The reason it's so good is because. The way that it's roasted with this Italian family that have been doing it for 5 generations, they build their own roasters and it gives it this incredible flavor. Mm. So that one there, be careful with that. That's called Door Kicker. That's our pre-workout high caffeinated blend.
Make me shit myself?
Bro, I gave a bag of that to the county sheriff's department.
Yeah.
They renamed it Murder Boner.
Really? Are you meant to snort it or what?
No, I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
But it's strong. So very proud of that. My buddy in Australia runs it, Ian Norrington. His story is incredible too. Like, ex-celebrity security guard, Usher and Bieber actually named his first child. Like, I nearly went on a date with Hillary Duff because of him when he was out here in LA.
Dude, you're
fucking awesome.
She
saw her ex-boyfriend and got married 3 months later. But the new book's out, Uncaged. It's on Amazon. Yeah, I'm, check it I'm out, on guys. on the Instagram. I just started doing a little TikTok stuff because I was on.
Please don't look at my TikTok.
One with you know, it's a chick called Jax.
She's great. I saw you in the gym, and I was like, I don't know what this dude's name is. I'm not gonna walk up to her like, hey, bro, like, looks like you got a crazy story. Can you come on my podcast? And then she posted, shout out to Jax because I've done a video with her as well.
Oh, nice.
And she posted it, tagged you, and I was like, this is a sign. Like, I gotta talk to this dude. Because, people be like, oh, yeah, he's Australian. He'd be good to talk to. I'm like, fuck. But I get, like, really nervous, and I don't want to come in the gym because you'd be like, we're all throwing weights around and
shit. That's really nice of you as well. Don't lose that. Because, if you had approached me in the gym, I would have fobbed you off. I would have just been like, because I get it a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yeah, cool, bro. Like, I would have been nice, but I'd be like, I'm not really doing podcasts right now.
Yeah.
A little podcasted out. But, you did it the right way.
Damn.
And it's a cool podcast. You guys got a great studio.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Book's out. It's Uncaged. It's basically the stories that I told you now, but way more in depth with way more crazy, funny stuff.
Wow.
The shark attack and everything that I get to do behind the scenes in Shark Week, which is like, you know, we'll spend like a month or weeks out on a boat at sea with all this crazy shit happening.
And then they put like 10 minutes.
30 minutes, you know, is put into a show. Wow. Like, we've had captains of the boats nearly die, people nearly get eaten, so many crazy stories. So I don't know if Discovery Channel knows I put it in there. So
yeah.
I put all the secret shit in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd expect people that almost die if you're on it.
Bro, do you hear about the jackass guy that got bitten last year?
No.
Having jackass on Discovery Channel on Shark Week, first of all, is a terrible idea. And so they did it.
I saw Steve-O do, that was a while ago, they put the hook through his mouth.
Yeah, no, they had a guy like, I think it was like wakeboarding or something. My buddy, who's a shark scientist, Craig O'Connell, was hosting it, and he's just shaking his head the whole time. One of the guys got bitten on the hand, and like all his tendons got severed and stuff like that. So
those guys are nuts.
Shit happens. Like, this isn't acting. Like, what we do out there is serious. There's no stunt doubles. There's no lines. It's like us just doing our thing. Like, I don't have a dude that's going to parachute into the ocean for me with one leg and one hand. Like, I had to learn how to parachute myself.
Yeah, that's a tough job.
I nearly died on the practice jump in Palau, diving, like, parachuting into the international airport. I nearly got wrapped up in my lines. I couldn't control myself. I'm, like, spinning uncontrollably. The alarm's going off in my helmet. I'm like, I'm going to end up as salsa on the ground in a second.
Fuck.
Terrified. Bro, all worked out. I lived.
Yeah, you're here. You're here. You're happy. It's your birthday. Happy birthday, bro.
Thanks, mate.
Wow, I really appreciate it. If you did enjoy today's episode, please go give him a follow. Please go get his book on Amazon. Check out his coffee if you want to shit your pants and have a crazy workout. Don't snort it. Shelf it. Do whatever you want. Damn, bro, this is awesome. And I'm so glad that we connected and we got you on the podcast. It was fucking.
Same, man. I have to take you for a workout.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if I'm able to keep up. You're a big boy. Awesome. Thank you so much. If you did enjoy it, make sure you leave 5 stars. Love you the most. Awesome.